Welcome to the Go Procast, where we invite business doers who are changing lives by sharing their stories, their strategies and tactics, and who bravely talk about their failures that actually led to their biggest successes. Now it's time to Go Pro with Jeremy Torres. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Go Procast. And today, we are going to be talking to a very special guest. His name is Sporty King. I met Sporty King when I was in North Carolina as a member of the National Speakers Association, and they have a chapter called the Carolinas. I have an office there at the time, and so I joined my first association in the NSA was the Carolinas. And I'm going to tell you, the reason I am a professional speaker today is because of the members of NSA Carolinas, bar none. Zero, I'm telling you 100%. That's the reason today. Paid to speak over my shoulder here. Kevin Schneider, Dr. Kevin Schneider, wrote the book on being paid to speak. He's the reason I'm a professional speaker. Who introduced me to Kevin? Larry Long Jr., a member of NSA Carolinas. How did I meet Larry? Met him through the Noodleberg Morning Huddle. And so it all comes back. You guys will hear me talking. There's Steve Noodleberg over my other shoulder, or over the, on the other side of my bookcase there. They're prominently up bookcasing or bookending my book, because the reason I am where I am today right now, big reason, Kevin Schneider, Steve Noodleberg. I'm waiting for Larry to write his book. Come on, Larry, get on the ball. So anyway, I met Sporty King through the association. Sporty started his speaking career in 1994, and he has acquired quite a few certifications. And when I say acquired, I mean he earned them. These things are very hard to get. He's got CHP, which I always thought was the California Highway in Pursuit. All right, I got CHIPS, California Highway Patrol. I'm John, and he's Punch. SME, which is Stress Management, Stress Mastery Educator, which is very impressive. He does a lot of anger management, change, reintegration skills, but he's an expert on a lot of personal responsibility, the impacts that words have on lives, and just all around great guy. Really, most importantly, is his books. He's written 8 books. One of them is called Situations That Unleash Our Focus and Faith, and the book is called Stuff Happens. Let's bring on my friend Sporty King. Mr. Sporty, welcome to the Go Procast.
Oh, man. Good to be here, Jeremy. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, I started this really not that long ago. I was in construction for 30 years, telecommunication construction. I traveled all over the country. I did a lot of good stuff, a lot of ups, a lot of downs. A lot of people kind of know my story. And now I live a get-to life. I built my this is called the Get To Studio, all right, G-E-T-O, Get To. And I get to meet people like yourself who influence me, who affect me and infect me. And I'm stealing that, of course, but being a poet as you are, I wanted to steal a good poet, a good rhyme. So just, I'm a poet and I don't even know I'm one, right?
Oh, that didn't rhyme.
Well, at least, didn't know it. That's right.
At least you didn't fully steal. Right. You added a little bit. That's called poetic license.
There you go. So tell us a little bit about Little Sporty, because what happens is people see these interviews and they think, oh, Jeremy's a professional speaker. He's always been one. Negatory. Right. Mm-hmm. Sporty, tell us about what got you here, where you grew up, what you got into before speaking, and how you became a speaker.
And absolutely. But let me drop a cherry on something that you said earlier that I think that is crucial. When you were talking about yourself, self-correcting is super important, okay, and being a professional. And you said I was a professional. That right there is one of the delineations that we all have to realize when it's time to go pro. Are you moving from being a public servant or a professional servant? But notice servant is still in there. So absolutely. I was glad that you caught yourself there. But I also say I'm glad that you self-corrected, because if you're going to be a professional, you have to self-correct.
Yes. Accountability.
You know, yeah. Right? There's so many little ingredients in what we do that sometimes we, you know, it's through situations like this where we talk about it that then we say, oh yeah, wait a minute. Yeah, I do that.
That's right. You know, being professional speakers, we do have a lot of titles, right? Because it lends itself to being a coach, being a facilitator, you know, being an advisor, being a podcaster. Correct. But at the end of the day, we're here to serve, to spread the word, to help people. And in our experiences and our relationships are key and vital. So thank you for being into my life.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for being in mine. And even a quick dovetail off of that as well. And believe me, I haven't forgotten your question. I think our listeners will see how sometimes what we do is we say, oh, I got off the topic. And the truth of the matter is you actually never get off the topic. Yeah, see, because the topic is you. So if the topic is you, you really can't get off it, because what happened is, Jeremy, you opened up a thought in my mind about me that I hadn't thought about. So I'm like, wait a minute, you know what? If I talk about this, that's going to make it easier for me to get this across.
Right. In Spanish, they call that chispa, the spark.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, and there's one of the things that slows us down is that negative self-talk.
Mm-mm. All right. Right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm off the topic.
They're screaming at themselves in the head.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then looking for somebody else to blame for our shortcomings.
That's it. Okay. Accountability is way at the top of the list of successful huge. People.
Which is why it starts with an A. But anyway, so like you said.
Hold on a second. I know a lot of people listen to me, but he's melting the walls on that one. My walls are burning there. That's a good one, Sporty.
So what you said about, you know, see, customers, I play with English language. This is what you'll hear, and again, as I talk about how I melded into this business. I play with the English language. And if you say it slow, think about customer service. If you say it slow, it's customers serve us. Mm. Customers serve us. So it serves us to have customers.
Okay. Yeah, because so I was going the other way with that for a second. It's like, that sounds counter, you know, intuitive. Customers mm-hmm. serve us. We serve customers, but I see where you're going. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be in us without the customers to serve. Yeah.
And part of what I did to grow my business is just that. Help people see there's another side. See, control your vocabulary. Don't allow your vocabulary to control you. So there's the initial, oh, I know what he's talking about. Oh, wait a minute. I hadn't looked at it that way. Now we got communication.
But you know, as part of being a proactive mindset is not having a proactive mindset. It's developing it, and you're constantly developing it. So if you're looking at the English language and at language period in that way, you're always being proactive, because you're always trying to see the different ways to use words in an unusual way to stick out and make yourself a differential. You know, maker. And so that's an interesting way to stay positive or to stay proactive.
Mm-hmm. And look at that. Even the word pro is in proactive.
Absolutely.
Man, you can't get away from yourself, can you?
That's what stoicism is about, right? The universe has a plan and you got to put the work in. And that's why I say the opportunities avail themselves. The work, you put the work in, that's the controllable that you control. The wins are already in the win column. The losses mm-hmm. are already in the loss columns. Mm-hmm. If you do the work, it's going to work out. And mm-hmm. if you lose, it's okay. You put the work in. It was supposed to be lose. Mm-hmm. If you win, you wouldn't have got that win without putting the work in. Mm-hmm. So that's what stoicism, a lot of it is all about. Marcus Aurelius, I read a lot of him. It's almost a religion. You know, it's very close to Christianity, stoicism. So anyway, back to.
Right. Well, like I say, never off topic, because once you meld that into how I started, I'm a native New Yorker. OK, you know, born and raised in Harlem, New York City, and born and raised in the projects. But you know, it's interesting. I lived in Chicago for 23 years. And it wasn't, I was in Chicago from 1988 to 2010. But it wasn't until I got to Chicago that I understood the negative connotation of the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I grew up in the projects back in the 50s, I grew up, if only your listeners could see how good I'm looking right now. I'm looking marvelous.
You look marvelous.
But back in the 50s and the 60s, when I grew up in the projects, and in New York City, there was not that negative connotation about it. The projects was built for middle income families. And so, what the beauty of it was mine was two blocks and we had nine buildings. Eight of the nine buildings were 21 stories high.
Wow.
With at least 10 families on each floor. So I grew up in a community in two blocks that could be somebody else's, whole community,
right.
Town.
Yeah.
And that shaped a lot of what I did with my life. Never looking at it and say, oh my God, I grew up in a project. Mm-hmm. No, I saw the opportunity. Imagine what my communication skills had to be because I had to have relationships.
Right.
To get along and it was very diverse, that's one of the things about New York is called the melting pot and very diverse in my neighborhood. And so that really helped shape me. My birth name is Rispodi, which is R-Y-S-P-O-D-I-I.
Is that Jamaican descent?
It's an Arab Jewish name.
Okay. Arab Jewish. Wow.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
A faith that my father practiced that we never practiced.
Bodhi.
And so hold on to that because this is the whole deal. Imagine that. Now, here we are in our 50s and 60s and we're saying Rispodi. Now try to be five.
Rispo.
Right.
I was too risky. That's what my buddy called me. You were Jay, just Jay, but too risky is the name I got tagged.
Right, and you're trying to pick up a team to play tag or hide and go seek. You're not trying to get hooked on phonics. I want to pick up wrist. No.
So Bodhi, Bodhi. Yeah, sure.
You had to have nicknames where I grew up. So my nickname was Sports Car because I ran real fast. All of this is relevant.
Oh, wow.
All of this is relevant, yeah. Now, by the way, both of us are nursing bad legs.
Oh, yeah, because of how we treated our sports cars bodies.
Right. And so I tell people now I can only run in an emergency.
Oh boy, yeah. I run errands.
And we're running our mouths wonderfully.
That's, right, that's what we do, yeah.
But let me go faster there. So but again, relevant, because then when I went to school, elementary school, some of my teachers decided to call me Spodi instead of Rispodi.
Oh,
so okay. Now the people on the block who you go to elementary school with, they're hearing Sports Car and Spodi, and that's how I got the nickname Spodi.
It evolved.
Yes.
Right.
And evolution is what we have to do in terms of being successful.
And it's just a good human, right? We have to evolve and not. So I always say when I hire people, because I had a very large workforce at many times in my career, and the one thing I will not abide. I don't mind mistakes, but I won't let people make the same mistakes over and over and over again. That tells me that you're not evolving, you're not growing, you're not paying attention to the details. Mm-hmm. So really, that's a key to for us being professional speakers, evolving with the time. Gosh, how much did you have to evolve? I wasn't a speaker before the shutdown. I don't use the C word anymore, but you must have had to evolve a lot.
Yeah, we can certainly fast
19 to 21.
Yeah, from that. Well,
before we do that, though, how did you get into becoming which?
That's what I was getting ready to fast forward to. Sports car.
Good. Always one step ahead.
But thank you. Yeah, I had the fast forward is that I went to high school. I went to college. I noticed I didn't graduate from college. I did 3 semesters in college. I majored in what I called social life. And social life is a 3 semester curriculum.
That's about the average, right?
Right, where you party and you know, and I learned close to nothing. But I also encourage still students to go to college, because what we sometimes don't prepare our students for is that a large part of the college experience is socialization.
Yeah, that's true. And I do not push college too much, but I will say a local community college is never going to be a bad idea. Don't get into debt going to big college when you don't know what you're doing yet. That's dumb. It's stupid. You're wasting money, wasting time. Yeah. However, right out of high school, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you want to do. Learning how to learn is something that college is good for. So do it locally, stay at home, spend a little bit of money, you know, on the local college. Nobody really pays attention that much to that. Where did you graduate from? And what was your GPA for most 99% of jobs in America?
It's a tiebreaker at best. Right. You know, but the key is, do I like you?
Yeah. These are what matters. What do I do with these? Mm-hmm. What do I do with this? Mm-hmm. I have a knowledge education. I was homeless at 17 years old. I didn't graduate high school even. I got a GED to go into Marine Corps. And then I found out the day I was supposed to ship off that they don't take GEDs. You have to have 15 college credits. So I have a knowledge education. I've spent a lot of money on that, more than I would have spent if I would have went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. But on mentors and coaching, you know, courses and people, following people.
And it goes back to what you said earlier about your wins and losses, and destiny is there. That was a part of your journey. That, you know, I'm not about regret. I'm about, you know, what were the lessons I got from this? So when I left college after 3 semesters, they used to call it dropping out. And so, you know, now it's called leaving. So I left in December of 1974. In January of 1975, I started working as a messenger at the Wall Street Journal. And I started an 18-year career at the Wall Street Journal.
Now that sounds very exciting.
Yes. And in my 18 years, Jeremy, I had 7 job titles, 7 promotions, and 8 job titles in 18 years, where I started as a messenger. But when I retired in 1994, I was an advertising sales manager.
So you worked from the bottom up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the genesis of where my speaking career was allowed to evolve, because I would use my personality, I would use my poetry, communication skills, and not reading a script about you need to do this, but just being sporty.
Yeah.
You know, and letting it develop.
And they allowed that.
Yes, they did.
They nurtured it. I guess they nurtured it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Nowadays, things are fast and everything is technological, and it's harder to probably feel that atmosphere for people these days.
You know what? And it's a combination, Jeremy. I think it's harder to feel it because it's harder to be aware of what it should feel like.
Mm-hmm.
See, most of us are pretty good at knowing what it feels like to be betrayed. Because when someone betrays you or stabs you in the back, they did it and it hits.
Bam. Yeah, yeah.
But how do you really recognize when someone is trusting you? Because the ball hasn't dropped yet. You know, I trust you with this. I could actually trust you with more, but I can't prove that until it's time for me to trust you with more.
Yeah, that's a slow roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for me, I was a little bit unique because I had no real people to look at, really, I had no self-esteem. So the few people who just gave me morsels was very big to me. Mm-hmm. You know, those first trusting pieces that I got were very recognizable because I wasn't used to it. Mm-hmm. But I'm unique, to your point.
Yeah.
But if you look for it, that's where it goes back to mindset.
Yes.
You know, if you look at somebody giving you something as they owe it to you, right? They hired me, so they owe it to me. No, they don't.
Nope.
You know, but if you look at it as, wow, I know they hired me, but they're trusting me with this. Just if I do a good job with this, I've always been a pleaser anyway. And I didn't know it was a proactive category or trait.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that's very important for people to realize. You got there because of that, but
and that's what I mean about not reading cue cards. You had to just okay, this is next. You didn't stop and say Jeremy says this, person says that. You know, it was oh okay, I know who I'm with. Oh okay, yeah. I know. You can learn more from a negative role model than you can from a positive role model.
Yeah. I have a PhD.
Yeah, because a pretty hard day, right? And so, a negative role model shows you, I don't want to be like that. A positive role model goes to what you said about the self-esteem. A positive role model makes you say, I don't know if I can be like that. Mm. And that can slow down your development.
How come do you think so many people use their bad upbringing as a crutch and perpetuate it into the next generation and next generation? I broke that cycle for me and my children, and I see the way they're coming, and they're going to continue that. I've got four well-adjusted, you know, young, professional, hard-driven kids, but other people that I grew up with, some family members, they didn't. And, you know, four or five generations back, I heard the stories. And I saw two generations back where I grew up in just a tub of crap. So how do some people break that? And why do most people don't or not?
Well, let's combine one thing I said earlier with what you just did in asking me the question. I said, control your vocabulary. Don't allow your vocabulary to control you. And in your question, you said, why do some people use that as a crutch? So let's look at the word crutch, because that's what actually is the focus. People have decided to use that as a crutch. See, there's the double meaning of crutch, right?
Yeah.
A crutch is something to help you, but something that you are leaning on because you don't want to take responsibility for what happens if you lean up off of it.
Yeah, I think, there's nature versus nurture too. And I think that maybe I was... And I don't use the word luck too much because I created a ton of my own luck. But I did meet two women in my life that were very special and got my attention. And I wanted to make them proud and I want to do the right things for them. And, you know, so at the key moments in my life, I met people who weren't in the world of crap that I was. And I saw, wow, you know, that looks like something I could be. And I tried to mess it up a few times, more than a few times, probably. But maybe that's something that has to do with it. Is some people just don't meet that mentor, whether it's a relationship, romantic or relationship, or a boss, or just a person in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why I guess it's really important to really be an example every day, because you don't know who you're going to impact.
That's right. And that's why one of the things that that I focus on is personal responsibility. And so it's like you say, somebody has to have the mindset of saying, okay, I stop that. One of the people for me was my father. My father had a sixth grade education. He taught himself how to read, probably in his 30s. By reading the New York Times. But what he did was he had that entrepreneurial spirit. What he taught me growing up is he said, and I've always believed this, I have never worked for anybody. Mm. I worked at a company with people for myself. So I've always had that mindset that goes to what you're talking about, self-esteem and unique. I've always had that mindset that says, I am Sporty King.
Yeah.
I work for me. So maybe I got to pay my rent, but I'm not working to pay my rent. I'm working so that I can have a place to live for me.
Right.
And so the mindset is super important. When I left the journal and started my speaking business, I didn't just immediately jump right into it. I actually left the journal, and believe me, I love corporate America. I'm not one of those stories of, corporate America screwed me and I had to get out of there. I love corporate America. Without my 18-year experience at the journal, I would not be successful in my business right now. And And so when I left though because I was part of what I call the corporate mistake.
Hmm.
And the corporate mistake is, which I created that.
I was going to say corporate mistake.
Yeah, I made it up. But I was a good salesperson. I was, okay. So that was one of my roles. I was in sales. My last 18, out of my 18 years, my last 12 were in sales, and which rolls into the speaking business. Okay. But I was a good salesperson. So the corporate mistake was, hey, good salesperson, let's make him a sales manager.
Classic. Classic mistake. If anybody's good at anything, they make them a manager. However, where you probably have a modicum of success right off the bat is because the way you looked at working with your people in above that ladder, you probably looked the same way people down the ladder. You don't work for me. Right. I work with you.
Right.
And so at least you probably had a big head start.
Right. And did that just bring us back to customers serve us?
Right.
See,
right.
That's what I'm saying. You're never, you're never off topic, because what made you is what you have to be able to pull up. And what we do for a living, Jeremy, we pull up memories.
Yeah. Yeah.
We pull up memories in our audience so that they can get the same message that the person before us delivered.
Right.
But that wasn't their messenger. You're my messenger. I needed to hear it from you versus hearing it from that other person. Mm-hmm. And until I reach my messenger, I'm not going to get it.
Right, right.
I'm not going to.
And so that's you being consistent,
boom,
is very important.
Very important.
Yeah.
Very important. Never give up on your message, because if you do that, you just gave up on your audience. You know, I hear people say, And this is maybe an entrepreneurial speaking profession mistake. You know, I don't care if my audience is 2 or 2,000. I speak with the same energy. But then when they get an opportunity, they say, well, let's just wait for a few more people to get here. No.
I'm not here for them. Really, you're here for you. I can speak to 2 or 2,000. I also have a thing where, early is on time and on time is late. Anyway, so out of principle, I'll start and you can catch up. There's the slow people. But I get it, depending on the customer or the client. It's very interesting. And it's a good way to, because what the problem that I'm going to see, we were kidding earlier before the show that I don't have ADHD. I have 100 HD. So I know some speakers have the same speech, the same keynote speech or signature speech for 5, 6, 10 years. I know I can't do that. I could never do that. I'd bore myself. Even if my keynote or signature speech was the most impactful to the most people, I couldn't do it because I wouldn't deliver it with any energy by, you know, year two. So, but good thing for me is that I have so much to draw from, because I did have, you know, I had a PHL. It's a pretty hard day. I had a pretty hard life up until 20 years old. And then from 20 to 40, it went pretty good. And then at 40, everything lost everything again, had to work everything back up to where I am now. So I've got so much to draw from. I can definitely change, you know, gears and speak to a really wide audience. So how do you kind of drive your life and your career in speaking? Do you pretty much stick with the same message but change the you know, the stories, because you're so broad with your how many people you help?
Sure. And it's interesting because your question almost twists your own words, because your question is the answer. You will use, Jeremy, the same story.
Mm-hmm.
But you will have new analogies and ways of approaching it. And that's not to slap your wrist, but, you know, but that's what we do is in learning together, is recognizing it. You may not recognize, it may not be recognizable as the original story because of what has happened in your life.
Yeah.
That makes you aware, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and let me use an extreme example. It's like the person who has been molested. And so they start off their speaking business talking about the trauma of being molested. Well, after a while, they don't, you know, or they may get an audience where they don't want to hit that using the word molestation, but now they're talking about impactful moments in your life, mentors. All of those
healing things, right? Therapies and tactics to get, you know,
connects back because of what?
The energy too. And the energy.
Because now when you say it, like you say, your energy, your passion for delivering that message has a whole new meaning now.
Yeah. And plus now the room.
Now I'm 50, I see what happened to me at 15 a lot different. And I know I can't say it the way I said it when I was 30. So Jeremy, you will never let go of that message. That's the beauty of what you do. That's the public to professional. Because the professional know how to massage it so that it, because it's an impactful thing for your life. You are somebody's messenger. And if you lose your message, then you've just lost somebody who needed you to that authenticity that you talked about earlier.
I love that because that just gives us meaning, gives us purpose. You often have to look inside for your drive. They come for your whys. But I can add that one now to my whys. Ooh. Why? Because people are depending on it.
And you know what you can also add? Did you just hear it when you said to your whys? You can also add WISC to your whys.
Whys. Love it. I love it. So develop your, I like it. I like wordsmithing, you know.
Yes.
I was told I was stupid. I thought I was stupid. I knew I was stupid for many years until I was 22 years old. So I really lean into looking, like you said, at words differently and sentences differently. And I'm the king of dad jokes at home, right? I pause a movie and I just repeat a sentence. They say a different way and I just wait for the laughs and I get a lot of crickets mostly, but I still do it because I think it's funny.
One out of 17 ain't bad.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
My company is called The Top Line. And the reason I call it The Top Line, because so many people talk about the bottom line. Business, you got to reach the bottom line. Well, I say you have to reach the top line. Hmm. And the top line is how I feel affects other people. You have to reach people so that you can get to the bottom line. And so, so everything that we've talked about, if we were to go back, rewind the videotape, as they say, and you listen, it's people-centered so that you can get results.
Right.
You know, and so you take care of you so that you can take care of those around you. When you take care of yourself, you got everybody else covered. Mm-hmm. You got it, but you got to mask
on first.
Yeah, boom. Yeah. And you got to have the patience. You got to have the patience.
Yeah, yeah. I have one of my sons, we share a business together, a landscaping business. He's 20 years old. He's got 5 employees, 2 full, dump trucks, trailers. They do 300 customers plus a lot of different specialty jobs. They're going to do about 300,000 this year in revenue. And watching him do what he does with his employees and getting these opportunities for me to step in and say, tell me a different way you could have handled that, And one of our guys threatened to pull a gun out back, because the guy wouldn't let him do the weed eater or sit on the mower. He was just the weed eater guy and he wouldn't. So Garrett said, well, that's not why I hired you. And the guy started yelling and someone else came and the guy said he was going to pull a gun. And I said, Garrett, whose fault is that? That got there, and I just waited for it. And I asked him again and again, finally came around to, it's my fault because I let it get there. And I was like, there you go. The employees, seeing someone at 20, getting these exposed lessons, people look at millennials these days and they look bad at millennials. Like people look at when you're saying that your housing nowadays has that negative connotation. It didn't then. Well, millennials now, back in the old days, kids, they're our future. Now kids are, what the hell is the future going to look like? But let me tell you, I have a couple of them. They got promise. And this nation has the strongest military in the world, period. 90% of them are millennials, are young, are under the age of 20 years old, 22 years old, going out there, putting their lives on the line and doing things that I wouldn't want to do at 50, at 40, at 30. Yes. Never. I mean, I wanted to at one time in my life, but they are doing it and they do it and they excel at it. So all you got to do is take these millennials who you think are, selfish and all that. It's their environment. But these kids are very capable. Mm-hmm. They're very, very capable. So I'm very happy about our future because I know we are making a great crop of kids, of responsible people, right? I think the world has just have to turn the news off a little more and just really look outside. Oh, there are some really good people.
Are you
people.
Sure you're not in my office feeding me lines? Jeremy,
I got off on a tangent, but
you know. Again, never off topic because you feed into new. I work with the military. I work with families that are going through the deployment cycle. And one of the things I say to them is, you know, because we say, and I want us, the public, please continue to say to our service members, thank you for your service. But what we could also say is thank you for answering the call. Because there's a high calling on a military family's life. And when I started, this is another thing in terms of going public to pro. Okay. When I started in, I've been on this contract for 11 years with the military and I do not have a military background. So when I made it onto the contract, because a friend of mine put me on the contract team, I was intimidated because I'm like, oh my God,
imposter syndrome.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be talking to these soldiers and airmen. And, you know, and I don't have that background. After 2 sessions in my training, because it's on the job training where we go to the event and talk and do these seminars. And what I realized, Jeremy, and this is why you've got to have the positive mindset. See, I could have gone there and kept, because I started out, my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to say. And I could have sat there continuing to say, I don't know what I'm going to say. Instead, I sat there and said, here's what I can say.
Here's what I know what I know.
Yeah, here's what I can, here's how I can change what was just said. And here's the growth. I learned that my mission changed. See, I thought that I was there to help them become better service members, soldiers and airmen and Marines. And when I found out that I was there to help them become better employees, citizens, parents,
right,
people. Siblings, people.
And they probably helped you right back.
And there it is. And so now, once I reshape my mission in life, and that's why I say you never lose what you do. You know, once I say, oh, wait a minute, this is what they need me to do. So I need to talk about such and such. And one day I'm talking to them and I happen to say, I said, well, you know what, my mother used to always say, and how many of us, you know, most of us have quoted either a mother, a father or a mentor, someone who's gone. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I had said, my mother always said, after she had died.
Okay.
Because even when she was alive, you still say, oh yeah, my mother always says, and she's alive. But, but once I said it and she was no longer there, I now knew that she was never going to say that again. And in that moment, I was like, whoa. But see, it just came out because it was necessary based on what I was doing to serve them. It was not about me. It was about me using what God has sent me to deliver.
Yes.
And that's what a pro does. What have you been sent to deliver?
Right.
And so, and the way I do things, like let me just add this one thing. The way I do things, because I just as we're doing, I love to be very conversational. And so when I said that to them, I said, you know what? Commercial. I said, I have never said that before. Wow. I told them, I'm in a moment right now.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking me to that moment.
Right. Yeah. It was the vehicle that had that epiphany in that moment. Felt good. Nice and warm.
Yeah. And so as speakers, Jeremy, my mentor, rest in peace. His name was Robert Gedalia. And he used to always say to me when he started, he said, remember, you get paid to live your life and describe it from the platform. You no longer are in charge of your life. You are now paid to live your life and describe it from the platform. Everything that happens in your life, you have to step outside and say, how can I reach people from the platform with this lesson?
Right. Yeah. And are you very critical? And I know this is going long, so everyone's going to get into overtime, but I need to ask you this, because do you get critical on the message, on the words, or do you, you've been doing it probably a long time, so you wing it, but I find I'm very critical about the words, because words have meaning and they can hit differently and they have different meanings the way you say it. And you, or do you more can just control it? Just don't be so worried about every word. Worry about the delivery system, the volume, the tone, the pace, the pauses. You know, body language is probably more important than if you say whom or who. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, communication is 93% nonverbal. So only 7% of the words you use are part of your communication impact. 55%, this study may have changed in the percentage, but 55% is how you look. 38% is where I focus, and that's the tone, how you sound, because there's a lot of difference between saying, I feel for you versus I feel for you.
Mm. Right.
And as well as one thing I always say to speakers, you know, and it's one of the things I deal with in the military, and I say it to them to their face as well, because the military, you got your macho commanders, they want to get a, okay, can everybody hear me? You know, they say it out loud. Well, good. In a crowd of 300, 500, 600 people. Well, of course, when you scream, can everybody hear me? The people in the back will say, yes,
yeah,
they can hear you. But now when it's time to talk, you know, well, good. Well, then I won't use the microphone. No, but when you don't use the microphone, you take, and this is the public to pro again, you take away the opportunity to have a soft tone.
Yeah, yeah.
It slows down the pace.
Yeah.
And helps people measure your words as the feelings in their heart that they need to get through the moment.
It's funny, because I was thinking that earlier and I didn't want to interrupt you because you were doing so well. But when you said, we were talking about how we impact people with our words and you do it. And I was thinking, you also change, you evoke emotion. You know, it's not the thoughts that you're triggering, which you do. You said you make them remember things, is exactly what you said. And I was thinking what it also makes them feel, those feelings, that brings up those feelings. And boy, that, you know, I always get goosebumps. I got them right now for some reasons. You know, and that wasn't like a profound thought, but it's that, for me, I'm an emotional person,
yeah.
You know. And that's our job now, is really to take our stories and transfer that feeling, evoke those feelings, because that's where you really get people on board, I think.
Yeah, well, let me tell you a mindset thing of mine with that, a very quick one. And that is, you know, a lot of time, and let's mix this to the wonderful statement you made about our youth being, having such a bright future for us. A lot of times speakers and speakers listen right now. And let me say, this is my advice to you. We hear speakers, you know, and we actually hear more of the outside people telling the speakers, you know, it's disrespectful when they're looking at their phones while you're talking. And I say, well, no, actually not for me. I said, because see, if I look out in the audience and I see people's face down in their phone, I figure that they're tweeting, this guy is knocking it out the park. You should be here. See, it's a mindset.
and a lot of times that's how they communicate. That's what they are. They're taking notes. They're not writing. They're writing the notes. They're writing every word you're saying.
Yes, they're loving you. So you can, and that's the power. You, a professional does not give up their power to a non-professional.
And
look at the, you know, professional athletes, you know, who do you want in the free throw line when there's 1 second on the clock? Do they have to erase the whole, you know, 50 million people in the background. Audience? They have to erase and say, no, I got this. So you have to, and which sports game have you been to where everyone was rooting for one team?
Right. That's not how life works.
Not how it goes. And as the player, at which game did you know, were you able to separate the people who were booing versus the people who were cheering?
With the exception of 2020, but there was no one in the stands. That was the most weirdest, eeriest things, you know. So I have one more question to ask you, and then it's because I don't ask many questions same throughout, but I want to know about a story, because we really do at this program in this my company, when I foster, mentor, and help younger people understand that life is gonna mean falling, and you could take this the falls and you can quit, you can take it as a lesson, you can take it as maybe it's not for you, but at the end of the day, we all have a story or two that I call them growth landmines, right? Okay. Instead of a failure, is you were walking along a path and all of a sudden you stepped on a growth landmine. It blew up your path and you thought, maybe it's not for me. Maybe I shouldn't supposed to be doing something else. Maybe I'm a failure. However, without that and getting through that, you wouldn't be the person, the uncle. We didn't even talk about that, how critical your family is to you, uncle of over 30 kids. But you wouldn't be that without that time in your life. Do you have one for us that you can share with the audience?
Sure. And I attach it to the word you used in the opening of that question, and that is the word quit. You know, Q-U-I-T. I believe that is quench your understanding that it's time. Q-U-I-T, quench your understanding that it's time. So, you know, if it's time for you to take another direction, don't decide that you have given up on what you're doing. It may be time to just take another direction, but that's where you've got to figure that thing out. When I left Wall Street Journal, I had, my challenge was that I was used to a Fortune 50 company budget mentality, and I now had a sporty king fortunate to have $50 budget.
Big difference.
Right, but I still lived in that Fortune 50 world, because that's who I was. And so when I left the journal, I spent my money. I went through my savings in less than 3 years. And so I ran into, you know, there's now is time for the car repossession, the housing foreclosure, the bankruptcy, and there's where the doubt could come in. So, but because of seeing that this was a calling, when it started, when the cycle started and they came to repossess the car, first of all, they knocked on the door. You know, repossessing is not the same as getting evicted, where they throw your stuff out on the street. Yeah, yeah. They come and say, oh, we're here to talk about the case of Rispoli King versus car company name. Not familiar with it. And this is at 7 o'clock at night and the car is in the garage. Now, what am I? Somebody said, well, you shouldn't have said anything. You should just act like it. Excuse me. They knocked on my door. Let me know. We know where you live. We can now actually stake it out and wait till you go to the supermarket.
Prolonging the inevitable.
Yeah. And then take the car while you're in there shopping. Yeah. So instead, I opened the garage. They helped me take stuff out of the trunk.
Then you get to keep your stuff. Yeah.
Jeremy, I went into my house, and this is where the quenching comes in. This is where the quitting could happen. I went into my house and I sat down. I said, first of all, I'm sitting on my couch. Those are my curtains. I start taking inventory.
Yes. Wow.
That's
my
TV. That's my stereo. And that's what I start doing. And I said it out loud because I'm like, no, this is not going to stop me. I said, look at me being used for my gift. Yeah. And somebody doesn't want me to deliver. And so now, months later, when it came time for the housing foreclosure, again, they don't throw you out. They say, look, when would be a good time for you to vacate? We worked out a deal. I'm in Chicago. They can't really sell a house in November and December because of the snow. So they're very flexible. And so, again, it gave me time to look for a new place to live. The bankruptcy, you know, see, so all of these things starting to come at me. And that was when I was able to say, and we're not going to talk about it, but that book, my book, Stuff Happens. That's what I mean by situations that unleash our focus and faith. Once those things hit me and once they hit you, you've got to now unleash your focus. Okay, who am I? And what am I supposed to be doing? And now your faith. Is this what really God has meant for me to do? Is it? Depends on what your faith is. Maybe, and I know I'm using the word God, but maybe you don't believe in God. Yeah, let's not make it a religious thing in the first place. It's spiritual. And so if you don't have whoever your deity is, if you don't have that as a solid root, yep, then maybe it's not time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's me. And let me just put one cherry on that. Like I open with a cherry, let me close with a cherry. And again, to use the word fail. And fail for me is faith activated in loss.
I love that. Faith activated in loss.
Yeah, because once I lost the car, once I lost the house, I had to activate my faith.
Yes.
And say, yeah, do I need to go back and just give this up and get a job? No, I said, you know what? No, I now need, and now my mentor came into my ear. Everything that happens in your life is a chance for you to connect from the podium, from the platform. Yeah. Yeah, so now it gave me new compassion for what it means for you to go from 17 different houses. Now, when I talk to you, when you're in my audience, and if I offhandedly talking about, oh, these kids in the system, they going through 17 houses, I've just stabbed you in the heart and you've just stabbed me back in mine.
Yeah.
So instead,
now I have empathy.
Boom. And that is what we do.
That's what we do. Yeah. Hey, I have all these thoughts, and part of being a good interviewer is not saying your thoughts every second, but the quitting part for me, and I heard it in your story, is, And I have a guy named Noah Telefaro. He's an actor and a friend of mine. I interviewed him. He says it perfectly. This kid's 22 years old. Way, way, way. Talk about wise. W-I-S-E. He's very gifted. He says you can quit what you're doing as long as you don't quit on yourself. And that's what I think. Like you said, and for me, when I had the same kind of issue where I lost everything under my, I was 38 years old. I never quit on me, but I did. I had to change direction. You have to make money. And so I just did something else, but I did it with the same, energy and the same, even though it was way below me. I will tell you, it's below me because I worked so hard to get to the level in life. So going backwards so many steps was below me, but I didn't let it outward. No, and I didn't let anyone know that. I was happy to do it because what other choice did I have? All right, do it badly? No, I did it great. And so I didn't give up on myself. And then what happens is if it's really meant to be, it'll come back around. And that's what happened. I got another chance 2 or 3 years later. But because of what I learned for those 3 years, being humble and looking at other, skills and techniques and tactics and strategies, being in the sales and arena now, instead of construction for 3 years, I learned a ton that I would have never had the opportunity to learn without that failure. And so but I never gave up or quit on me. I just quit on that idea because it was driving my family into homelessness. And here I am, just 10 years later, 12 years later, mind-boggling.
Jeremy, that is P.S. That is one of the hugest lessons we can give to anybody about going from being public to professional is who else will not eat based on your dream?
So I call that risk reward. I don't say I call it risk consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Look at who your family won't eat. If that's the consequence that you don't think of.
Right. And see, I could take different chances because I didn't have the family. Mm. And so that's why I say, I think that's a huge lesson that people need to get. They said, do this. No. Who will not eat based on your dream?
Now, my last name is spelt to risk and my blood type is B positive. So it's really, I'm like a horse that's going, baby. I'm a sports car, sporty car. Oh, man. Thanks for bringing this home with such great with your energy, your laughter, and again, the NSA Carolina's way. I belong to Florida now, Speakers Association. I belong to two different Toastmaster groups, professionally speaking, and born. One of them is North Carolina. They're both actually Carolinas, actually, but they're virtual. So I surround myself by the professionals who make me better, who I am vulnerable with. And you are on that list, sir. You're a mentor of mine. I appreciate everything you do in life. I got an eye on you. I'm following you. Before we go, though, I just want to ask you, where can people find you? What do you want people to know about what you got coming up? And where's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to use your services?
Please go to my website, sportyking.com. And there you can find everything I do, including live broadcasts, weekly broadcasts, a fun letter. I don't call it a newsletter. I call it a fun letter to keep you positive beyond booking me. But use the resources and get yourself well and get somebody else well.
That's beautiful. Well said, sir. All right. So thank you for joining us. And if you can catch me at LinkedIn is kind of where I live. That's kind of my home spot. But if you're watching this episode, you can take your phone out right now and just take a picture of that scan code. And that will give you all of my contacts, my Instagram, my Facebook, my LinkedIn, all of my websites. I got three or four different websites and my YouTube channel as well. But I thank you all for joining us, and you all go pro.